Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kof He. Today's daf is being studied in honor of Mr. and Mrs. Eddie and Fuzi Beda, dedicated by Ronnie and Frida Gindi and family. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilui Nishmat Hakam Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We are going to begin on Kuf Dalet Amud Bet, and we are going to start two lines from the bottom. In our last shiur, we learned the case in the name of the Braita. The Braita said that if a person corrected one letter, for example, in a Sefer Torah, so he's going to be Hayab if he does it on Shabbat. So the Gemara said, if he wrote one letter, he's Patur. Now you tell me if he just corrects the letter, he's going to be Hayab. So Rav Sheshad gave an answer. He said, Kegon shenetalo legago shelchet va'asao shene zaynin. It's a case where, let's say, in the Sefer Torah, he needed to have two Zayins next to each other, and instead was written the letter Chet. So by removing the roof of the head, so now was formed two Zions. So that the Gemara says, since he made two Zions and he wanted the two Zions there, so that's a case where a correction could make him Hayav. Now we go to Rava's answer. Rava Amar, Kegon shenetalo letago shel dalet v'asao resh. The Gemara says that, let's say you had a dalet, and by erasing the roof of the dalet a little, so you turned it into a resh. Now the only question is, how could you be hayav in that case? Technically you only wrote one letter. So that she tells us, two lines from the bottom, Rava amar kigon shenetalo letagad dalet, delo avi ela hagat otahat. Even though you only corrected one letter, ubedavar mu'at hayav, but you're going to be hayav even for such a little tikkun, hu'il v'zeh tikkun ha-sefer. So that she tells, because we're talking about a case where the sefer is going to be fixed by correcting that letter. Then Rashi throws in an extra reason, it seems, da'asur le'adam l'shot sefer she'ena mugah. It's forbidden for a person to leave a sefer in his house that is not corrected, that has mistakes. Mishum al tishkon ba'olecha avla. You're not allowed to have in your house books that have mistakes in it. So that she says that this would be analogous to the case of where we learned in the last shiur where a person writes the last letter to finish a sefer, where even the hakamim said you hayab. So in this case, by correcting a letter, in order now you're making the sefer kasher in the sense that you could leave it in your house, you're not going to transgress the atishkon da'olecha. So therefore, the Braita says you're going to be hayav even on one letter. Comes the Gemara and says, Tana, we have a Braita. Nitkaven lichtov ot achat. The fellow on Shabbat had intention to write one letter. Ve'alu b'yado shtayim. And now came out that he wrote two letters. That she says, "Haynu name mitkaven lichtov chet." His kavanah was to write the letter chet. Ve'katav shne zaynin, and instead he wrote two zayins. So the Braita says hayav. Comes the Gemara and says, "Va'atenan patur." What do you mean? We clearly learned that if a person has intention to write one letter and came out two letters, he's patur. So the Gemara answers, La kasha ha de ba'e ziyune, ha de lo ba'e ziyune. Now, ziyune are referring to the tagin, the crowns on top of the letters. The letter zayin is one of the eight letters that has on top of it a crown. The letters that have crowns, we learned, are sha'apnez, gets, shin, ayin, tet, nun, zayin, Gimat Sadi, seven letters, I correct myself, that have to have the tagim on them. So the Gemara says, in the way that she learns it, second line in Nashi, Hadit Nan Patur, that which we said if you wrote one letter,
and you came out the two letters that we said, Patur deba'ezayune, it needs to get the tagim on it, the crowns. Sha'adayin sirichot rashia zaynin lezayinan betagin shelayin. Sha'ziyunin sirichot gimel ziyunim. It's three crowns. Yamin usmol ulma'ala. One to the right, one to the left, and one to the center. So therefore it sounds like if the letter is incomplete, which means it still needs to have tagin on it, so in that case you're going to be patur, because the letters were not written correctly yet. However, in a case where you don't need tagin, for example, let's say you're not writing in a Sefer Torah, where the letter stands without a tag, it's still a legal letter. So therefore, the had the ba'eziyune, according to Rashi, you'll be patur. Had the lo ba'eziyune, you'll be hayav, because the letter can stand as is. That's the way Rashi understands the sugya. The other mefarshim, like the Tosfot Reed, learn the exact opposite. They say like this, imalu biyadom mizuyanim. If let's say when you made these letters, they came out with tagim on them, right? You had a het, and you were trying to make, let's say, a het, and all of a sudden came out two zayins, and if they came out with two tagim on them, then it's patur. Why? Because he says, since your kavanah was only to write one letter, and now you ended up writing two legal letters because you have the tagim on them, so then you're going to be patur. However, if let's say you wrote the, intended to write the chet, and two zayins came out, and after the two zayins came out, you said, oh, very good, and you added tagim to them, so then already you're going to be hayav, because that's considered as if you did it lechet techilah. So therefore you have a different way of learning the sugya. Only question is, according to all the opinions, we can ask a question. Bottom line, how could you ever be hayav? You only had kavanah to write one letter. Seemingly it should be analogous to the case that we learned earlier, where a person, let's say, was mitkaven to throw two amot, and he ended up throwing four amot. Since he didn't intend to do the melakah, so therefore he's patur. When here, he didn't intend to do a complete melakah. He only intended to write one letter. So and it turned out he wrote two letters. How could he be hayav? So the Acharonim understand it is as follows. When a person throws two, has kavanah to throw two, the throwing of two cannot mitztaref combine with the second two. Because his intent was to throw two, meaning it'll land after two. Once it lands after two, you cannot mitztaref the second two to the first action. Masha'inkin, when you're writing one letter, so it has the ability to mitztaref to the letters that are after it. So therefore, even though the guy was mitkaven to write one, but that one letter allows itself to be mitzuraft, connected to the letter that's following it, and if, even though you only mitkaven for one, and he ended up writing two, so there are cases where he could be hayav. Again, according to Rashi, the case where he'll be hayav is lo ba'eziyune. Lo ba'eziyune, where the letters do not need the tagim, whereas according to the Tosfot Reed, as we understood, if they came out mizuyanim, then you're going to be patur, because there already you have two letters where you only mitkaven to write one. The Gemara continues, Katav ot achat nutrikun. We learned in the Mishnah, if a person wrote a letter, nutrikun, in an abbreviation. Harambam gives an example that a person wants to signal the number 40. So he wrote the letter mem, and then he wrote a little italic on top of the mem. So to be Yeshua b'mitra mechayeb, v'achamim potrim. So we say we have a machloket, in the Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yosef ben Zimra, minayin lelashon nutrikun min haTorah. How do we know from the Torah this concept of nutrikun, where you write a mnemonic, you write a word, and the actual word actually stands for an abbreviation of more words. So Gemara says Shneemar by Avraham Abinu, ki av hamon goyim netatich. God tells Avraham Abinu that he's going to be an Av Hamon Goyim, a father of great nations. So the Gemara says, Av Netatich Leumot, Bahur Netatich Baumot. Av is Rashi Tevot. Av is a father. You're going to be a father. God says, I placed you to the nations of the world. Bahur, a chosen one
Netatich ba'omot. You're going to be over the nations of the world. So when God told Avram, Av actually means Av and Bahur, father and one that is chosen. Hamon also is Rashi Tevot. Haviv netaticha ba'omot, Melech netaticha le'omot, Vatik netaticha ba'omot, Ne'eman netaticha le'omot. Hamon, the he can be interchanged with the letter het. So God says, Haviv netaticha, you're going to be loved by the nations. Melech, you're going to be the king, so to speak, like the sons of Het told Avraham Abinu, Nesi Elohim Atah B'Tochenu. They called Avraham a prince amongst them. Vatik. Vatik is a...
Vatik is a...
Or would be distinguished. Okay, distinguished among the nations of the world. And the Iman, someone that is upright and trusted amongst the nations of the world. Rabbi Yohanan Dideh Amar, Rabbi Yohanan himself said, Anochi. God gave the Ten Commandments. The first word of the Ten Commandments was Anochi. So what does that stand for? Nutrikun. It's an abbreviation. Ananafshi ketibat yahibat. God said, Ananafshi, I myself ketibat, wrote the Torah, and yahibat, I gave it. Not to show you that the Torah was written by God himself. Other Mefarshim explain, Ananafshi, God, so to speak, is saying, my soul and my spirit, ketivat, is in the Torah itself. If one wants to tap into the organus, that light, that hidden light, it is actually in the letters of the Sefer Torah. As God says, Anan Nafshi, my spirit, ketivat, is written, yehivat, and I gave it over. Rashi Tevot Anochi. Rabbanan Amri, the rabbis have a different understanding of Anochi. Amira ne'ima, a pleasant right, a pleasant saying, statement, ketiba, I wrote down, yehiba, and I gave it. Again, that is referring to the Ten Commandments and the Torah. Ika de'amri anochi de'mafreya, and some learn anochi backwards, starting with the yud. Yehiba ketiba ne'emanin amareha. Yehiva was given a writing, Ne'emanin Amareha. Its statements are upright and trustworthy. Deber Rabbi Natan Amri. Rabbi Natan's yeshiva had another Rashi Tevot in the Torah, Nutrikun. Ki yara taderech lenegdi. That's when the donkey of Bil'am talked to Bil'am when the Malach appeared. So the donkey said, Ki yarat aderech. So what does yarat mean? Yare'a Ra'ata nateta. The donkey was scared. It saw, meaning it saw the angel, nateta, and it veered off the path. The Mefarshim explained that it seems the donkey was scared even before the angel appeared. Jesus had fear once it already went out on the derech. Yare'a. And then ra'ata, it only saw the angel after, and then nateta. That's Rashi Tevot, yarat. The Beit Rabbi Ishmael Tan and the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Ishmael, we learned Karmel, Kar Male. On the second day of Pesach, the Torah tells us we have to bring Korban HaOmer. Korban HaOmer is taken from the first shearings of the barley of that season. And the Torah tells us that you take from the Karmel. What does Karmel stand for? Kar Male, which literally means a filled pillow. That's referring to the types of grains of barley that you take, that she writes, in Dibur Matkil Karmel, Gabi Minhata Omer Ketiv, Geres Karmel, Shmivia Keshi Laha. So you bring the barley when they're still moist, Be'od Shalzera Nafuah, when the kernels are bloated inside the stalks themselves, Ve'akar Shil Kash Malehemenu. Which is karmale, you have to take it when they're filling the stalk itself. Hence, karmel, karmale. Ravachaber Yaakov Amar, vihu kelelani kelelan nimretzet. When Shimei ben Gera cursed David HaMelech, when David HaMelech was running from Avshalom, so David says, vihu kelelani kelelan nimretzet, and he cursed me a kelelan nimretzet. So the Gemara wants to know, what does this word nimretzet mean?
Now, literally, nimretzet would mean a explicit curse.
So what was this explicit curse? Nutrikun, no'efu. Shimei called David a no'ef, an adulterer. Mo'avihu, a descendant of Mo'av. Rotseyahu, a murderer. Soreru, an enemy. And a to'eba, and a disgrace. Hence, ukilarani kalim nimretzet, is Rashi Tevot of all those words. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Amar, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak brings a proof from when the brothers were falsely accused by Yosef for stealing his goblet. And they came along and they got caught. So they said, Man edaber uman etztadak. What can we say and how can we justify ourselves? So the word etztadak is Rashi Tevot of five words. Nechonim anachnu, they said we are right. Tzadikim anachnu, we are righteous. Teorim anachnu, we are pure. Dakim anachnu, we are clean. And Kedoshim anachnu, we are holy. I saw the Mefarshim explain this last Nutrikun in the following way. There were five different things that Yosef suspected the brothers. Three of them, when they were still together in the house of their father. The three in the house of the father was, he suspected them of eating Eved Menahai, he suspected them of Gilui Arayot, and also mistreating the Bnei Shefachot, the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. And two things, when they got down to Egypt, that was, he accused them as spies, Miragilim, and also as thieves for stealing the goblet. So Keneged, the five different suspicions that Yosef told the brothers, so they justified themselves by saying, Nechonim. First of all, we're right. That's Keneged the Meragirim. Just like the brothers said to Yosef, Kenim anachnu, lo ayu avadecha meragirim. They use the word Kenim. We are right. We're not spies. When they said the word Sadikim, that's Keneged the claim of Ganavim. Tehorim, they were Tahor, that's Keneged that they ate Eved Menachai. Because when you eat Eved Menachai, that's Metameh person. Dakim, is they clean? That's Keneged the Zilzul of the Bnei Shefachot. And Kedoshim, that's referring to that they were not suspect to Gilui Arayot. Like the Torah says, Kedoshim Tehiyu, and we learn from there, Pirushim Tehiyu Men Arayot. Comes the new Mishnah and says, Hakotev Bet Otiyot Beshteh Alemot. If a person, let's say, writes two letters in two lapses, which means we learned till now that to be chayav a korban, you have to do the entire melacha with a shikha, with a forgetting that you don't know the melacha is asur. It means you know Shabbat, but you don't know the melacha. However, in this case over here, he wrote two otiyot b'shte he'alemot in two different he'alemot. He wrote the letter, right, when he forgot that it was Asur, and then he remembered, and then he forgot again, and then he wrote the second letter. Or the next case is, Ahad Shachrit, Ve'ahad Ben Arbayim. Or let's say he wrote one letter in the morning, and he wrote letter in the evening. Now what's the Hidush in this case? So Rashi says that since there's a great time gap in between the two letters, meaning from the morning he wrote an Aleph and in the evening he wrote a Bet, so that she says over here that that's considered like two He'alemot, which is even if it was done in one lapse, but since there was a great time between them, we give that a status of two He'alemot. And because of that, the Gemara says there's a Machloket, Rabban Gamliel Mechayev, Rabban Gamliel says Yechayev, we'll see why, V'Hakamim Potrim. Now we understand the Shitat the Hakamim, because bottom line, in the first case, it was actually two He'alemot. So the He'alem splits up the Melacha, and therefore he only wrote one letter, and then he wrote another letter. They don't combine, because the Yidiah in between will split it up. And according to Rashi, the second case of the Mishnah, since there was a great time gap in between, the time gap is considered as if there was a second He'alem, and therefore the Hakamim will say, Patur, or is it Rabban Gamliel will say in both cases, Hayav. Comes the Gemara and says, what is the root of their Machloket? Rabban Gamliel Sabar, אין ידיעה לחצי שיעור. ורבנן סברי, יש ידיעה לחצי שיעור. רבן גמליאל's שיטה, which we learned several times in the Masechet already, אין ידיעה לחצי שיעור. A knowledge does not have the ability to break up half a shi'ur, meaning guy only did one letter. One letter is chatzi shi'ur. The fact that now he realized his isur and then forgot again, that's yidi'ah and half a melacha. That yidi'ah does not have the ability to split up the melacha, and therefore he's going to be hayab. Tosfot actually gives us a biblical source for where the Rabban Gamliel got his shita from. We'll read that together. That's the second Tosfot on the daf. Nireh, the ta'am de Rashbag, mishum dichtiv o hoda elav chatato. It says, and then he found out about his sin. Yidiat chatatu de shema yidi'ah. Aval yidi'ah de lav chatat na shema yidi'ah. Only a yidi'ah on a sin is considered a yidi'ah. But this is yidi'ah on half a sin. And therefore, it's not considered a registered yidi'ah, and therefore will not split up the sin. And therefore it can be chayav. Whereas hachamim will hold, yes yidi'ah lachatzi shi'ur. And therefore the two letters do not combine to be chayav. That's the way that she learns the sugya. Tosfot takes Rashi to task in the second case of the Mishnah, where he wrote one letter in the morning and he wrote one letter in the evening, where Rashi says that the time factor makes it as if it's two he'alemot automatically, because there was a lot of time gap in between, and therefore you're going to be patur according to the hachamim. So that Tosfot, the bottom Tosfot, of the last Tosfot of the Perek, Pidesh Bekuntras, Had Nakat Otachat Sha'rit V'achat Ben Arba'im, Kevan Davi Shahut Ben Taim, since there was a lot of time, Kidelida, right, there was enough time for him to find out that it was Asur Hashiv Kishtei Alemot. It's considered Shtei Alemot, that's Rashi. Ve'enre, Hada, Davi L'Faresh Shi'ur Shahut. First of all, if there's a certain time, the Mishnah should be very specific and tell us what is the minimum time between two half melakot that's going to be considered enough to consider it as shtei lemot. Furthermore, we learned in the last daf, katav otachat besipori veotachat beteveri achayav. We learned if somebody wrote a letter in the city of Tiberias and then he wrote a letter in the city of Sipori, Hayav. Now even though there must be a great amount of time till the guy got from Tiberias to Sipori, and still we said over there you're going to be Hayav. So how could Rashi learn? So Tosfot has a different explanation. We're talking about a case where obviously he had a yidi'ah in between, meaning he wrote one letter Shachrit, and in between the Shachrit he had a yidi'ah, then he wrote the second letter in Arbit. So what's the Hiddush? ואחד שחרית ואחד ערבית נקד לריבותה והפלגב דיש עם הידיעה הפסק ושעות גדול בינתיים מחייב רבן גמליאל. The חידוש of the case of אחד שחרית ואחד ערבית is a חידוש in רבן גמליאל, which we don't think רבן גמליאל is only מחייב when you have a ידיעה in between, because he says אין ידיעה לחצי שיעור. But he holds even with the ידיעה, if you had a big gap in between, still you're going to be hayab. So the Echad Shachrit v'Echad Arbit is a chidush to show you how far, to what extent the Rabban Gamliel is mechayev. Not only if you had a yidiyah, but even if you had a yidiyah with a great gap in between morning to evening, still it's considered one act, and therefore you're going to be hayab. Hadrana alach haboneh. That concludes Perek Haboneh. Now we begin Be'ezrat Hashem, the 13th Perek of Masechet Shabbat. Perek Haorek. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer taught, Haorek Shlosha Chutin Betchila. According to Rabbi Eliezer, what's the minimum amount of weaving that one is going to be Hayav on Shabbat? So he says, if you're starting the garment, Betchila, if you're starting the garment, then the shoot is going to be 3 Chutin. Okay, so the minimum is 3 weavings to be hayab. V'achat ala arig. Or let's say you have it weaved already, and you just add one to an existing garment, so then according to the Rabbi Eliezer, you're going to be hayab as well. Which means it's mitzaref to the ones that are before it. So the Rabbi Eliezer has 2 dinim over here. If you're starting the beged, the minimum to be hayab when you're starting a garment is 3.
However, when the garment is there already, and you just add even one, so the one is mistaref to the ones that are before it, and then we're going to be hayabachamim omrim, ben betchila, ben besof, shioro, bet hutin. The hakamim say it doesn't matter whether you're starting the garment, whether you're adding to the garment, the shiur for weaving on Shabbat is two hutin. And now the Mishnah continues, ha'oseh sheteh bateh nirin benirin. If a person makes, literally, sheteh bateh nirin benirin, I will explain to you what this means. If you remember in the diagrams that we had in the back of our Gemariot that talked about the weaving process, remember that we had frames, okay, different frames, and on the frames there was holes, and through those holes that were on these frames, they would stick the warp threads through these holes. They would stick one through it and one next to it, going on both ways. You had two frames, and they would stick, let's say, the odd going one way and the even going the other way. And that would, right, you have it in your Pirush Chai, you also have it in the appendix of your art scrolls. And what they would do is, they would use it. Now, they would lift, they would raise one, and they would be able to throw the weft string across it. So the Gemara is telling you that when one sticks at least two threads through the batinirin, batinirin are those loops that are on the frame. So once you thread two through the holes, so that's going to be considered hayav. That's what the Mishnah means. Ha'oseh shte batinirin benirin. And the Shi's Lashon is, shenatan bet hutin shel sheti. You placed both strings of the sheti, that would be the warp thread, benira, in the hole that's on the frame. Shekorin litzich. Okay, calls that the leitzich. Bikirus, benapa, bekabra, ubesal, hayav. So that she says that when it comes to the nidin and the kirus, the Gemara will explain what these items are. So wait for the Gemara. Bekabra literally is a sieve, and sal is a basket. What are you doing with these over here? So as we learned earlier, when they used to make baskets, they used to take the, let's say, the reeds of the basket, and they used to lay them flat, that would be the warp threads, and in order to keep them from moving, they would tie them from the top and from the bottom in order to keep them in place, then they would thread the weft through it. So that's also going to be hayav in ariga, by making those two ties on top of the basket before you weave them, in order to keep them in place. And the same thing would be with the napa, with the sieve. We had a picture of that in our odd scrolls as well on the previous dapim. Comes the Gemara and says, "Vatofer bet tefirot." If somebody sews two stitches on Shabbat, vakoreya al menat litfor bet tefirot, or somebody rips in the garment in order to stitch in that spot two stitches again, he's going to be hayav. So we have two dinim. Tefirah, the shiur is two, and kiriah is hayav only in a case where the ripping is for the purpose to restitch that spot. The Gemara will give us an example why a person would do that. Comes the Gemara and says, Ki ata Rabbi Yitzchak, when the Yitzchak came from Eretz Yisrael, Tani brought with himself a braita that said, Shtayim, he learned Shtayim, which means he learned according to the Bili Ezer that you chayav ariga if you make not three, but if you make two. So the Gemara says, Vanan Tran Shlosha, what do you mean? Al Mishnas Shlosha, Lakasha. No question. Ha be alime, ha be katine. It depends the thickness of the threads. Alime would be thick thread, and katine would be thin thread. What's the difference? The Gemara says, Amira lahaygisa, v'amira lahaygisa. You can learn it either way. Some learn it one way, and some learn it the other way. Amira lahaygisa, some learn it one way, that what? Alime, if they're thick threads, tlata. Then already, you need a three, tlata losatri. because since they're thick, you need to weave more in order that they don't come apart. It seems that the thick threads don't stay tight, and therefore you need to start off with three. Today, tlata lo satre, tre satre. If you only do two, then two will be patur, because they are going to come apart because of their thickness. Ketine, but on the thin threads, tre name lo satre. You'll be chayav even two, because they stay tight. That's one way of learning. And some learn the exact opposite. Ketine, tlata yedi'e, tre lo yedi'e. On these thin threads, it takes three to make a melacha that's noticeable. Since the threads are thin, you need three to make a noticeable weaving. Today lo yedi'e. Two, it's not noticeable. However, alime, when you have the thick threads, today name yedi'e. Even weaving two, already you see the garment being made. It's evident. Tanya, we have a braita. Ha'orek shlosha chutin b'techila. The person weaves three chutin, the beginning of the garment, ve'had al arig, or one on something that was weaved already, meaning he adds one to an existing garment, hayav. That would be the opinion of the Bidiyazir. Vachamim umrim ben betchila ben besov shiurad betchutin. As we learned, whether it's in the beginning of the garment or whether it's to an existing garment, the shoot is always betchutin ubasafa. But on the rim, and we'll explain what this means, bet chutin berochav gimel bateh nidin, which means, Rashi tells us, ubasafa bet chutin berochav gimel bateh nidin, yesh shorgin saviv habeger asafa beorek habeged kulo min acher shel sheti. On the rim of the beged, some use a different thread, a different warp thread that, let's say, comes down to the hem of the garment, and then they weave across it a weft thread at the safa, at the edge, we'll call it, of the garment. So that she tells us that the shiur, the Gemara tells, the shiur of weft thread that you weave across is the amount of bet chutin. Again, you have to take two weft threads across, berochav gimel bateh nirin, the width of three bateh nirin. Three of those, let's say, circles that are on the frame. So imagine you have three of them. So that's a small shi'ur of having to weave across. Because when you stick the weft thread, it goes across. How much does it have to go across? Even such a small shi'ur of the amount of three batei nirin across, it seems the edge of this garment is very small. And therefore, it's not like a regular garment where you throw the weft across the whole garment. Here, you just putting it a little across because it's only the edge of the garment, and still they're telling you even on a small shi'un, you're going to be hayav. The Gemara says, ha'lema zedome. What is it analogous to? Which means, when would you do such a thing? Le'oreg silsul katan. Which means when a person, let's say, would weave a small belt, so therefore the belt is very small, you don't have to throw the weft across a whole garment, therefore the shoe would be even a small width of throwing it across. Comes again, Gemara says, "Bet chutin berochav gimel batei nirin." So that's the shiur that you would do it. The width of three batei nirin. Va'oreg gimel chutin betechila. The person, let's say, in the beginning of the garment, weaves three. The hat al arig, or one on an existing garment, hayab. Stama can be the ayazet. That statement must be going like the bini ayazet. Tanya idach we have a braita. Ha'oreg bet chutin al hagas. The ala imra hayav. If a person weaves, let's say, two strings al hagas, how do we explain al hagas? That she says arig harbe,
large piece,
which means, let's say, a large piece of fabric, which means it's weaved already, and you add two more. The ala imra, or let's say you add it to the imra, would be the border of the garment. You add two more hayav. That would be like the opinion of hakamim that always the shiur is two. The Be'ezer Omer, Afilu Echad. And Be'ezer again says, once you have an existing garment, whether it's the border of the garment, or whether it's a big garment, a gas, you're going to be Hayav even one. Ubisafa, Safa would be the edge of the garment. Shnei chutin berochav shloshah batin yirin hayav. Like we learned earlier, that on the edge of the garment, where it's a very narrow spot, even if you only send the weft through a small amount, a small width, you're going to be hayav. Again, the Gemara says a similar thing. What is it? When would a person do such a thing? Leorik tzul katan, where a person, let's say, is weaving a small belt, which he would weave on the bottom of it, that, because the width of the belt is very small. Comes the Gemara and says, right? And the opinion that we just quoted, that if you did two strings on an existing garment, a big garment, a gas or ala imra, on the rim, two is the minimum. Stama kirabanan. That must be going like the opinion of the Chachamim that say the shiur is always two. Hamza Gemaran continues. Haose bet batenirin. Right, the Mishnah said, if a person sets up two strings, benirin, in the nirin. So the Gemara wants to know, what is this benirin here? What are these nirin? We explained it already. Those are referring to the loops that are on the frame, that they stick the warp threads through them. They would stick two strings in the batenid, in the holes. And it seems the way that she understands in the weaving process, they put a third string over it. So it seems you had a different processes in how to weave. So that she's telling you the way he understands it, they stuck two through the holes themselves, but it's not finished. They would take a third string and stick it somewhere above one of those strings, and that would be considered the full process. Again, we're not too familiar with the weaving process of the olden days, but this obviously in those days was a very common thing, and it was understood. Comes Gemaran says, Bikirus. One of the cases of the Mishnah that you hayav in weaving is the kirus. So the Gemara says, my bikirus, what is kirus? Amarav matsuvita. Matsuvita. Now, Rashi again, without getting into great detail, Rashi tells matsuvita is another form of the weaving process, the way they used to do it. It seems this process was not done with the frames and the loops. It was a different system, maybe with rods. And therefore, if one who uses the matsuvita system of the weaving, he is going to be hayav. Batofer betefirot. And now the Gemara continues. If a person weaves two stitches, Gemara says, Hatanina ba'avot melachot. Why is the Mishnah repeating us sewing? We learned that already as one of the 39 melachot, that tofer betefirot. Clearly, one of the 39 was somebody that sews two stitches. Why would the Mishnah repeat it? Mishum de kabalei lemitna sefa. Because it's a setup for the last case of the Mishnah, that koreya amenat letfor bet tefirot. Since we wanted to discuss the second case of the Mishnah that says, and somebody that tears a rip in the garment in order to stitch in that spot to tefirot, katanena me. So we said the first case as the lead-in, hatofer. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Vakoreya haname tanina bavot melachot. What do you mean? Even koreya, that's also one of the 39 melachot. So why did it have to say it over here? Ela mishum dekabayel miti sefa hakoreya b'hamato ve'al meto. Which means the next Mishnah is going to discuss a person that rips something on Shabbat in anger, or he rips because, God forbid, somebody died. So mishumahaki ketanei tofer shtei tefirot. So therefore, the lead up to those cases which were not discussed, the Mishnah starts off. Number one, let's review. Sewing two tefirot is asur. Koreya al menat mitfor shtei tefirot is asur. Now we can discuss the case that we didn't discuss before. What about ripping in anger or ripping because somebody died? Now the Gemara will explain those cases. Koreya al menat mitfor shtei tefirot. A person that rips in order to sew in that spot two stitches, hechi meshkachat la. What's the case? So the Gemara says, de'avda ki chista. where let's say you made a garment kichista, like a pocket, which means the garment is buckling. It's folding over like a pocket, and therefore it's not lying straight. So therefore, what would you have to do in such a case? You would tear that garment to straighten it out again, and then you'd sew that spot so it'll be even. That's what it means, kichista. Now, Rashi on the bottom of the Amud Rishon had a question. Rashi said, how come the Gemara didn't ask why we mention Oreg again? He's Oreg, which means, and the Batenirin, that was also one of the 39 Melachot. There the Gemara has no problem in why the Mishnah was repetitious. To that Rashi says, because we did add some cases. We added the case of making the basket, and we added the case of making the sieve, where you're tying down the warp strings over there, the kiros, we discussed a different type of weaving, that's also asur. So therefore, since we added to the cases, it's not considered redundant. But here, we didn't really add anything. We wrote exactly, tofer, amenat, tefor, shte, tefirot, and korea, amenat, tefor. That the Gemara said, no, it's introduction to the next cases. And that's the case we read now in the new Mishnah. HaKoreya b'chamato, if a person, let's say, rips something in anger, v'almeto, or because somebody died, so he's making kiri'ah, the laws of kiri'ah, the laws of mourning demand that one must rip his clothes, v'chol ha'mekalkelin, or for that matter, anything that a person does on Shabbat that is destructive, piturin, he's going to be exempt. V'amekalkel almenat letaken. However, if a person, let's say, does something destructive, but with the intent in order to fix, shi'uro kimtaken. So the shi'ur is going to be the amount that it takes to fix whatever is considered fixing the item that was destroyed. Shi'ur amlabin vamnapitz vatsoveya vatove. Now the Mishnah discusses the shi'ur of different melachot. Melabin is whitening. That's taking the garment, let's say, and soaking it in the water to make it whiten. Vamnapitz would be combing the garment to take out the tangles. Vatsoveya is dyeing. Vatove is spinning. Kimlo rochav hasit kaful. The shi'ur is a seat kaful, a double seat. Now Rashi taught us that a seat is the distance between one's index finger and his middle finger. If a person extends them as far as he can, that's the shi'ur of a seat. A seat kaful would be the distance between a person's index finger and his thumb when he extends it. So that's the shi'ur of wool, for example, that one would be chayav if he spun it, if he dyed it, if he whitened it, or if he combed it, let's say. Now, all those cases are the shiur of seed kafu. Va'oreg shnei chutin, when it comes to weaving two strings, shiuro kimno asid, then the shiur is even one seed, which means that this is between the forefinger and the middle finger. That is the shi'ud of making the garment of weaving. That she says, we'll read that inside. Hasit kaful mefaresh b'gemara situ efsek shben etzba le'amma. That she clearly tells us the forefinger or the index finger is called a etzba, and the middle finger is called amma. Kemo shadam yachol arhibo. Right, the distance that a person can stretch them or widen them. The imtava v'liben v'nipet v'sava she'en kulan avot melachot chut achat aruch kishud hazeh. She's if the string that you did any of these melachot to were that big, so it's going to be hayav. Comes the Gemara and continues. Urminu, we have a contradiction. Hakoreya b'chamatov. A person rips up something on Shabbat in anger. Ub eblo. Or let's say in mourning, he ripped his garments for mourning. Be'al meto, or for somebody that died, hayav. He's going to be hayav. Ve'afal pi shemehalel et haShabbat, and even though he desecrated Shabbat, yatsa yedei kiri'ah. The ripping that he was obligated to do is considered valid. Even though he ripped the garment for avelut, be'isur, it counts. Well, here we have a contradiction, because our Mishnah clearly said, if a person rips on Shabbat in anger, or for his dead person, so it's going to be considered patur, because bottom line, he did something that is destructive. And now we see that he's going to be hayav. So comes again, Gemara and says, actually, let's just read up Rashi. Hakoreh b'hamato b'ibno b'hameto hayav afal pi ulmai digaris hakoreh b'hamato b'ibno b'hameto afal pi lo yadana ma yatsa yedea kiriyah sheikh b'hamato v'amai nakat b'hamato. Which means, when it says in the statement that we just quoted, b'afal pi shemagalet teshvat yatsa yedea kiriyah, that she's telling us, obviously that can only be going on the case where you ripped because of avilut.
Right.
There's no hayuf to rip if you're angry or because of any other reason. So obviously when it says yatsa yedei kiri'ah, it's referring to the one where you did it for the mitzvah of kiri'ah. So anyway, the Gemara says, lakasha, no question. Ha bimet dideh, ha bimet de'alma. Depends who died. If it's met dideh's own met, which is where he has an obligation to tear, so then already the tearing is considered a tikkun. It's not considered a kilkul because it's a mitzvah for him to rip. And therefore, if a person does that on Shabbat, that's considered fixing, doing something positive, and therefore it's going to be hayav. The Mishnah that said patur, still by way he's ripping out of tzar because somebody that he's not obligated to mourn for. And therefore, he's destroying his garment. So comes the Gemara and says, how could that be? Ve'al meto ketani. If you look in the Mishnah's lashon is ve'al meto. Meto is mashma, his met, something that he's obligated. So that doesn't work. It says, le'olam b'met dideh. Really, I can tell you, it's talking about his own met. U'be'anach de'lav b'ne avelut ninhu. So I can tell you, yes, it's a relative of his, but somebody that he's not obligated to rip for, which means it could be
his sister.
Exactly, not his sister, but in right, that case would be a married sister, or an uncle, or something like that, which is a relative, where he's not obligated to rip. That's why the Mishnah uses Lashon Meto, and that's why it's going to be Patur. Rashi says, Le'olam b'met dideh, Shemutal alav lekobro, meaning it's even incumbent upon him to bury. What are those that are mentioned in Parashat Emor? Abi ve'imo, beno, bito, v'achi, v'achoto. Exactly, the seven relatives. So comes the Gemara and says, v'hachamu hiyuve mechayev. The Gemara says, wait. Even if you want to tell me it's not one of the relatives that he's obligated to rip for, if he's a tamid hacham, he still has an obligation to rip, and therefore he should be hayav. Now how do we know that even a Talmid Hakam that's not a one of the seven relatives, one has an obligation to make kiri'ah? Titanya, Hakam Shemet Hakol Kerobav. A Talmid Hakam that dies, everybody's considered his relative. Gemara says, Hakol Kerobav Sagadadak? What do you mean? Is that possible? If you're not a relative, how do you become a relative? Elaem Hakol Kikrobav. Which means everybody's considered like his relatives. In what sense? Hakol korein alav. Everybody has to make kiri'ah, meaning rip their garments. Hakol holtzin alav. In the olden days, not only did they rip their garments, but they actually used to rip their garments where their shoulders became exposed. That's called halitzat katef. So they would do that also for the Talmid Hakam. Hakol mavrin alav barhava. And further, the custom was that they used to serve the first meal, which was called Saudat Avra'ah. It was served to them in the street after they came back from the burial. And therefore, at Tamir Chacham, everybody must eat the Saudat Avra'ah as the custom, the first meal coming back from the cemetery in the city. So now we go back to the question. Even if you want to tell me our Mishnah is talking about somebody that you're not obligated to bury. However, if it's a Tamir Chacham, you still have an obligation to make kiri'ah. And therefore, why would the Mishnah say that he's going to be patur? The contrary, such a kiri'ah is mandatory, that's to be considered a tikkun. Gemara says, Lo tzlicha delav chachamu. Very good, so I'll say the Mishnah is talking about where the guy who died was not a Tamir Chacham. So we're narrowing the case down. It was a relative of his, but not a relative of the seven that he has to rip for, and he also was not a Tamid Hakam. Gemara says, wait, V'yadam kasheru chayume mechayev. Even if he wasn't a Tamid Hakam, but if he's a Adam Kasher, which means if he was a, literally a kosher man, which means a religious Jew, you also have an obligation to mourn for him and rip. Titania. Bepenema metim banav ubnotav shel Adam kashem ketanim. Gemara says, bar minnan, why does a person's children, his sons and daughters, die, God forbid, when they are young? In order that the person will cry and mourn on a kosher man. Gemara says, what does that mean? God punishes him first before he did any sin? God punishes the man so he will do something? God takes away a collateral for the future? Which means, the way the Gemara's text is here, it sounds like God takes away the man's children in order to inspire him for the future to cry and mourn somebody kasher. So the Gemara says, for something that he didn't do yet, you're going to punish him? You're going to take away his collateral, his children? Ela, the Gemara says, mepene shelo bacha vetabel al adam kasher. That's a punishment because a person did not cry and mourn when a kosher person passed away. So God forbid, that's a person is held liable for that. God forbid his children can die as a result. Shekol abocheh al adam kasher. The Gemara says that anybody that cries al adam kasher, mochalim lo al kol avonotav, they forgive him for all his sins, b'shvil kavod she'asa, because of the kavod that he afforded the man. Now the way that Ein Yaakov explains this Gemara is that really the fact that you didn't mourn an adam kasher is no reason for a person's children to die. That's not such a big sin that should cause such a result. But there's other sins, like we learned in the second perek of Masechet Shabbat, that talks about, for example, ba'avon nedarim. If a person does not keep vows, so then already banim metim chas v'shalom. And the Gemara discusses some heavy sins that can cause children to die. So then the question is, what does the Gemara mean over here? So it means like this. Since we said if a person mourns an Adam Kasher, God forgives him for all his sins. So by going to a funeral or for mourning for an Adam Kasher, that'll forgive him for those sins that normally would cause his children to die. But the fact that he was not maspid and metabel for Adam Kasher, therefore his sins were not forgiven, therefore he still has those major sins, and therefore that can cause Chas v'Shalom his children to die. So it's not that the Adam Kasher, the lack of respect of an Adam Kasher in his death, caused the death of his children. It's as a result of by not getting Mechilat Avonot, so then already he'll be held responsible for the sins that he committed. The person's children that did not mourn on the Adam Kasher. So now we're back to the Gemara again. You just taught us in the Mishnah that if a person rips on a mit, he's going to be patur. So we established that you're telling me it's not one of the obligatory ones. But it's somebody has to bury, let's say. But you have to say he's also not a tamid hakam. Yeah, but what if he's Adam Kasher? If he's Adam Kasher, we see over that everybody has to tear. Says, Lord, Siricha delav Adam Kasheru. Okay, we'll tell you that what? We're talking about somebody that is not even considered Adam Kasher. So it comes again what God says, but still, if a person was there at the time of the departure of the soul, which means he witnessed it, he's chayav under all circumstances to make kiriyah. Which means even if the guy is not Adam Kasher, but you were there to see the demise of the person when the neshama left, you have to make kiriyah. The Tanya, because we have a braita. The braita says, Rabbi Shimon el-Chazar omer, ha-omed al-amet b'sha'at yitziyat neshama. If a person standing by a dead by a person at the time that his neshama left him, hayav l'krowa, he's hayav to tear. What is it analogous to? Le'sefer Torah shenisrefa. It's similar to if a person witnesses a sefer Torah that's being burnt. Just like the kedusha, the sefer cannot be burnt. Jesus, like the letters really go up to the Shamayim. So too, when a person sees a person dying, the goof is considered like the parchment, and the neshama is considered like the letters, and therefore he has to also mourn. He has to rip. That she says, the Sefer Torah Shenisraf, Haroeh Sefer Torah Shenisraf, Hayav Lekrawa. How do we know that? Kedavim Emoed Katam Emegilah Shesaraf Yoyakim. It says when Yoyakim, the king of Israel, he threw Megilat Echa into the fire. Megilat Echa was written by the prophet Yirmiyah. And Yoyakim did not want to hear about the bad omens that were written, and he took it and he threw it in the fire. Dichtiv lo pachadu. Not only weren't they scared to do it, they lo karu begadim. That even people who saw it did not even rip their garments. So that she says, af nishmat yisrael and he tell it. So to when the soul of Israel is taken, domelo she'en lo. She'en lecha, domelo she'en lecha rek b'Yisrael, she'en bo Torah mitzvot. Now she gives us a sevaralve. He tells us that even the empty one in Israel has Torah mitzvot. Like the Gemara says in another place, afidu rekanim shebahem mene'im mitzvot kerimon. Even the one that's considered not even so religious, he has in him filled mitzvot, like a rimon, and therefore when he dies, it's like a sefer Torah that has all the mitzvot in it, was nisraf. Even any Jew at the time of death, now already all the mitzvot that this person did or was capable of doing is gone. Therefore, person has to rip. So Gemara says, Lo tzericha. So you have to say the case of the Mishnah is de lo ka'eh b'shat yisiyat neshama. And again, you have to add another scenario to the Mishnah where he wasn't there at the time of yisiyat neshama. So you have to say he wasn't a close relative of the seven. He wasn't a tamid hakam. He wasn't a adam kasher, and the guy wasn't there at the time of the Yitziat Neshama. Therefore, his tearing is considered a kilkul. His tearing is considered destructive, and therefore it's going to be patur. Whereas the Braita that said if a person rips for a man, it's going to be hayah. That's what somebody is obligated to. Therefore, Gemara says tinach meto. Okay, so you answered me the contradiction between met of the Mishnah and met of the Braita. El hamato hamato kasha. But we have another question. The Mishnah said if somebody tears something on Shabbat in anger, patur. When the Braita said if he tears something in anger, he's going to be hayav. How do you reconcile that? So comes the Gemara and says, hamato, achamato, namela kasha. Anger on anger is also not a question. How to be Yehuda? How to be Shimon? You can say one is following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and the other following Rabbi Shimon. How does that answer? How Rabbi Yehuda amar melachas she'en tzricha legufa chayav ale? How Rabbi Shimon amar melachas she'en tzricha legufa patur ale? Now Rashi explains what this means, and we read it inside. How Rabbi Yehuda? Before we read that, let's explain it outside, because Rashi goes into an additional point. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda holds throughout the Masechet, and we learned this several times, that a melacha, the melacha that one does on Shabbat, she'ena tzricha legufa, that you don't necessarily need the result of the action, which means it's not the way that she learned it, a constructive melacha, it's more of a reactionary melacha, that, like the way that she said, you'd rather that you didn't have to do it in the first place. For example, the classic case was if a person had somebody die in his house and he carries out the met on Shabbat, that would be considered a melacha shena sidicha legufa. Meaning, person really doesn't want to do this melacha. He'd wished that it didn't happen in the first place. It's not like the melachot in the Mishkan, that when they carried the Mishkan, they wanted it to go from point A to point B. Here, he'd rather that it didn't happen in the first place. This case over here where a person's ripping his shirt because he's angry. So he'd rather that he didn't get angry rather than have to rip it. So therefore, it's not considered a constructive melacha, it's reactionary. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda holds, doesn't matter, melacha, shena sidicha legufa, hayav. So therefore, the braita that says hayav is going like Rabbi Yehuda, where the Mishnah that said that korea b'chamato patur will be going like Rabbi Shimon that says the melacha, shena sidicha legufa, patur. Now Rashi comes in and says, once you answer that by the two cases of anger, we can answer that by met, which means I can say the following, Rashi, umeto ameto acherami v'amatzle terutze, which means, already I can say, the Mishnah that said, if a person rips,
for his mit. I could learn, really, it's talking about somebody that he's obligated to rip for. And I can tell you the reason why you're patur is why, because bottom line, it's a melacha, she'ena tzericha legufa. It's because you really are not concerned about this rip over. You'd rather that the mit never died. And therefore, really I can tell you it's something that you're obligated to rip for, but quote unquote, Rabbi Shimon comes out, and the braita that says Chayav is going like the Biyuda comes out according to Rashi Abich Chidush, that even though it's a mitzvah to tear, that does not make it a melacha tzericha legufa. I should point out, Tosafot clearly argues on this and says, no, since it's a mitzvah to rip, then it would be considered a melacha tzericha legufa, and therefore even according to Rabbi Shimon, you'd be hayab. But I'm just pointing out that she clearly holds that the fact that the kiriyah would be a mitzvah would not take it out of the status of melacha she'ena tzericha legufa, and therefore according to Rabbi Shimon, you would be patur. Comes the Gemara and says, "Imar de shamat el Rabbi Yehuda b'metaken." Gemara says, "Wait, how could you tell me that the Mishnah that says you're patur when you rip something in anger, you're telling me it's going like Rabbi Yehuda? When did Rabbi Yehuda say his law of melacha she'ena tzericha legufa hayab? When at least you did something constructive?" When you did something positive, v'mekalkel mi shamate. But this case over here, it's a melacha she'ena tzericha legufa, because you don't really care for the tear, and you teared something, which means you destroyed something. See, there you have a double negative. There you have a melacha she'ena tzericha legufa v'mekalkel. There, the Biyuda never said his deen, which is even the Biyuda would say in the case of mekalkel, patur. Gemara says, Amar of Abin, Haina mimitakin. No, even in the case of tearing a garment in anger, is constructive. Why? Hu dekabi nahat ruach liyisro. Which means, since he pacified his yetzer, because he got his anger out, so that's the relief that he has for venting his anger, that's considered a positive actions. Even though he tore the garment, but the tearing over there is constructive, because he gave into the yetzer, which is he let out his frustration. So he gave and she says meshakechet hamato. He pacifies his anger. Uchi agavna mishare. So the Gemara says, you're telling me that this is considered a tikkun. Is the Gemara proponent now to vent one's anger? Which means, how could you tell me that when one lets out his anger and now he, you know, alleviates his frustration, you tell me that's a positive thing? Well, you call that constructive? Well, yeah, God, that Misha, is it permissible to vent one's anger in such a way? That, then, yeah, didn't we learn in a bright that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Mishum Chalfa Bar Igra, Shamar Mishum Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Hamkareya Begada Bahamato. If a person rips garments in anger, or let's say he breaks vessels in anger, or he throws his money and he scatters it in anger, this is tantamount to worshipping idolatry. The Gemara says, because that's the trade of the Yetzer Hara. Hayom omer lo asekach, ulmahar omer lo asekach. Today he tells you do this, tomorrow he tells you do this. Ad shomer lo avod, avodah zara, veolek veoved. Which means it's a gradual process the way the Yetzer Hara gets you to worship avodah zara. He starts off with making you do irrational things. And now from one irrational act will lead to another irrational act until a person ends up doing the ultimate irrational act of worshipping Avodah Zarah. So it's a slow process. So the Gemara, when you see somebody ripping something in anger or throwing something in anger, be careful. In your mind, that should be tantamount to Avodah Zarah, because that irrational behavior is the workings of the Yetzer Hara that gradually is going to get the person to end up worshipping Avodah Zarah. And Amar Abin Rabbi says, "Me'ekra, what's the pisukim to prove this concept? Lo yehye becha elzar, which literally means there should not be in you a foreign being. Lo tishtachavel el nechar. Nor are you allowed to bow to avodah zara." So the Gemara says, "Ezu elzar sheyesh begufo shel adam. What is the elzar
a foreign deity, so to speak, or a foreign power or force that's in the person, because the Torah says, lo yebecha. You should not allow in you to have a foreign power. That's referring to the Yetzer Hara, which you're not allowed to pacify the Yetzer Hara. By a person throwing something in anger, he's calming the Yetzer Hara. He's giving in. And what does the Pasuk end off and say? That's as if you're bowing down to El Nechar. So therefore, the Gemara cannot understand, how could you tell me that by throwing something in anger, that according to the Biyuda, you'll be Hayav, because it's considered constructive, because you let out your anger. Letting out your anger means giving into the Yetzer Hara. That's a terrible thing. That's tantamount to Avodah Zarah. So how could you tell me, according to the Biyuda, that's constructive and you're going to be Hayav again? We learned
the... like Rabbi Shimon, that it's Hayav.
Correct, which
constructive.
Which means we learned in our Braita, if you rip things b'hamato, Hayav.
Right.
So we said that's going according to the Biyuda. The Biyuda says Melachas Shira Seir Gufa Hayav. Gemara says, what do you mean? But this is Mekalkel. He didn't say it by Mekalkel. So no, it's not Mekalkel, it's Metaken. Where's the Tikkun? He let out his anger. Gemara says, what do you mean? Letting out your anger is a Tikkun?
Yes.
On the contrary, letting out your anger is giving into the Yetzer Hara. Lo yebecha elzar. You're not allowed to feed the foreign forces in you. So comes the Gemara and says, Lo tzericha. I'll give you the case. Beka'avid lemirma emta inchebet. You rip the garments in order to instill fear in the members of your household, which means you wanted to scare the children, so to speak. So you wanted to intimidate them. He really wasn't angry. He just needs to, intimidate them a little. So therefore, he tore the item. So there, it's constructive. Of course, he's fulfilling his purpose, because now they're getting scared, meaning they'll be obedient, they'll listen to him. Ki had Rav Yehuda. Gemara gives examples of Rav Yehuda, Shalif Matzbaita. What is Matzbaita? She says he had a certain garment that when he wanted to cause fear in his household, so he would tear it, and now they would get scared. Now the Rabbi Yaakov Tavre Mane Tivire, Rabbi Yaakov would break broken vessels, which means he didn't want to waste a good vessel, because he'd have a problem of Bal Tashrit, of just wasting something. So he would take a broken vessel and break it in front of the family, not because he was angry, but he wanted to scare them, so to speak, so that would be considered again constructive. Rav Sheshat Rameh La Le'amteh Munineh Aresha. Gemara says, and we conclude that Rav Sheshat used to pour the brine of the fish on his servant's head in order to scare his family. Rabbi Abba Tavar Nachtama. And Rabbi Abba used to break the lid of the jug in order to again instill fear in his family. So that would be considered constructive in order to get the family to listen to his words. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen. Amen.